Thank you very much for attending this session and being here to hear me speak. I apologise again for being a little late, but the beauty of public transport as it is, I don't know why I'm surprised. In the UK, we have a terrible situation. We were stood in the cold for 40 minutes waiting for one of the carts to come along. But here now, I very much enjoyed the first speaker, but I'll go on to talk about the piece of work that it was actually my PhD student, Anna, who was unable to make it with us today. This forms a part of her PhD thesis, and as I was the lucky one to be able to come through to New Orleans, I get the opportunity to present her work. So all the credit goes to Anna. I must make that point up front. So I'll be looking at a systematic review of the effectiveness of universal school-based programs aimed at the primary prevention of violence in secondary school-aged young people. Okay. So I have no relationships to disclose. As I said, this is work that was undertaken by Anna as part of a PhD, funded by Police Scotland. So the learning objectives: to describe the current evidence on the effectiveness of school-based programs, to evaluate the methodological quality of randomised trials and quasi-experimental design trials in this area, and to discuss the need for process evaluations to better understand the mechanisms involved in the success or failure of the interventions. So as we're probably all aware, if you're in the room here and are interested in violence, then youth violence is a major cause of death amongst young people, but in addition has a major contribution to non-fatal outcomes. The World Health Organization estimates that for every homicide there are 20 to 40 non-fatal injuries, which can include physical injury, psychological impairment, and just a general impact on quality of life. It also has a wider impact on the community. So issues around the fear of crime, fear of violence, can actually impact on people heading out into the community. This has obviously wider impacts on health. If people are unwilling to leave their houses to go into unsafe communities, then they're not going to be taking the physical activity. They may not be benefiting from social support networks, etc. So it has a huge impact. In addition, a lot of the sort of youth violence, particularly when you sort of talk about youth-related gang violence and gangs, there's a lot of alcohol and illicit drug use, which also presents health risk outcomes. And so one place in which we can look to intervene to address the issue of youth violence, and this is not necessarily incorporating the dating violence that we heard about earlier, but more sort of community forms of violence, is to look at schools and to focus on the schools. The reason being that a lot of sort of violence amongst youth tends to begin around 12 years, peaks around 16 to 18. There can be some variation there, but also schools are ideally placed to deliver programs because it is a location for social learning, and it obviously does give you access to a large number of youths, although obviously the issue there is perhaps some of those most at risk are not attending schools, and so they perhaps get they miss the sort of the net there. And one of the issues is that sort of in our experience when we've been looking around, a lot of the programs have often been implemented without evidence of their effectiveness. Now, that's not to say that we should wait until we have evidence of effectiveness, because we will never have the evidence unless they're implemented in the schools. But I think the importance, and everyone will be we're all singing from the same hymn sheet here, is that the evaluations need to be implemented at the same time, or developed at the same time as the implementation of these interventions. And so we often don't see that with some of these school-based programs, as well as other violence prevention programs. So the aim of this piece of work was to conduct a systematic review to understand the effectiveness of universal school-based programs aimed at primary prevention of violence in secondary school-aged young people, so those between 11 and 18. And so I'll quickly run through the methodology, go through the the outcomes, and then a brief discussion of some of the limitations and general summary of the findings. So we tried to be as broad as possible with our inclusion and exclusion criteria, so we weren't missing much of the literature. We looked to include both randomized and quasi-randomized designs. The types of participants, specifically those aged 11 to 18 in full-time secondary or middle school education. And then the types of interventions were universal school-based, that aimed to reduce non-fatal violent injury, homicide, weapons possession, aggressive behaviours or pro-violent attitudes. So tried to incorporate a large number of outcome measures. And here, this is specifically the outcome, the primary outcome measures that we included from a range of potential sources, to include hospital data, police data, school records, self-report, using validated scales or just normal self-report, looking at non-fatal assaults and violent injuries as both perpetrator and victim, homicides, weapons possession, incarceration due to violence, aggression, attitudes towards violence, non-physical aggression, and other adverse effects. So they were primary outcomes. Secondary outcomes were looking at other risk-taking behaviours, such those associated with violence, such as alcohol and drug use, and then other pro-social behaviours, such as empathy or conflict resolution skills or capabilities. And in order to identify the relevant studies, we tried to adopt a sensitive search to try and incorporate as many as possible. The initial search was done in 2011. It was then updated in 2013. We took the start date to be from 2002 onwards. We tend to do this because obviously the World Report being published in 2002, one would expect perhaps that there was a qualitative change in the nature of some of the interventions following that report. Whether that's the case or not, we're unsure, but we have to start somewhere. We limited the language to just English language. There's the potential that we may have missed out on some literature there, and as I'll speak to later, there were a few studies that were non-English language, and we're looking to get someone in to help to analyse those now, mainly in French and German. And then we utilised quite a large number of databases. These were databases that we were given access to through our work on a Cochrane and Campbell collaboration systematic review that we're currently involved with. So there were, you know, into double figures of the number of databases that we were able to look at. But we also then utilised other strategies to identify relevant literature, including looking at the reference lists of other systematic reviews and all retrieved articles, and then looking at the grey literature from WHO, CDC, the World Bank, etc. So we tried to draw the studies from a wide range of sources in order to ensure that we sort of identify the most appropriate information and interventions out there. And this here is a breakdown of the search strategy. So it's based on the PICO framework. So the population we're looking at, we use the terms of under 18s, youth, adolescent, teen, school or community or gangs. The nature of looking at interventions, so we use words like program, intervention, prevention, diversionary, reduction, etc. And then the various outcome measures that we were interested in. So in terms of the method in which we collated and then analysed the data, so all references from databases were imported into EndNote, duplicates were removed, titles and abstracts were screened. I'll go on in a minute to show the Prisma flow diagram of the inclusion and exclusion of papers at each stage of the screening process. Data was extracted into an Excel spreadsheet, including issues around study design, the nature of the participants, the type of intervention and the outcomes. The risk of bias was assessed using the Effective Public Health Practice Project's quality assessment tool, and I'll demonstrate that or illustrate that towards the end. And a narrative analysis was undertaken because it was not appropriate to do. Come on in. Yeah, come on in. Okay, there you go. A meta-analysis was not appropriate because of the heterogeneity between studies in terms of the participants' outcomes, study designs, and the nature of the interventions themselves. So here's the prisma flow diagram. So initially, we identified 3,099 hits from the databases and then 43 from the additional sources that we screened. Duplicate records were removed, which resulted in 1,500 papers to screen. 1,400 of those were removed after abstract and title screening, leaving 77. And then eventually, 13 full papers were included in the analysis. And I'll just go through those papers now. So over the next two slides, these are just the summaries of the 13 studies. Sorry, did you have a question? So if it didn't meet the inclusion criteria that we had back here, so it may have been that they didn't have the appropriate outcome measures that we were interested in, the nature of the intervention, so it may have been targeted at specific groups rather than across the whole year groups and things, and also then the type of study design. So I won't go through this line by line, but there are a range of interventions that were explored. Many of the studies came from the US, one from Australia, and mainly using quasi-experimental designs incorporating cluster randomization. So if anyone's interested, I can let you have a look at these slides after, so you can see specifically the studies here and follow up on them yourselves. In terms of the results, there were, as I mentioned, there were a variety of interventions that were represented within the literature. There's 13 papers. Some of them incorporated social development programs, which aimed to develop pro-social skills. There were a number that looked at social norms programs, promote school-wide norms against violence, and then those that incorporated the social norms aspect alongside social development. And then there were those that had social development elements and incorporated family sessions, so bringing in the family to be involved in the interventions. In terms of the context and the population, so 10 studies were in middle school and 3 studies were in high school to account for the age range from 11 up to 18. They were generally set in urban areas with high levels of socioeconomic deprivation. As I mentioned, all the studies were largely cluster randomized, cluster controlled designs, and the clusters were either at the school or the class level. And then attrition tended to be fairly low across the literature. The highest rate of attrition was in the Flay et al. Study, which reported a rate of less than 60%. And then the evidence grade, so looking at the risk of bias, etc., only two studies were considered strong, and those were the two by Simon et al. 8 studies moderate, and 3 studies were graded as weak in terms of the risk of bias. And so here are the outcomes, looking at the range of outcome measures across the top here, the study quality, then this column here, and then the colours denote whether the blue is whether the outcome is not measured, green indicates a positive outcome effect, yellow no significant effect, and a red negative outcome effect. So if we look at the strongest study design, you see that there is tends to be a positive outcome effect here for most of the studies. Then the other strong ones by Simon et al. 2009, there was a negative effect for physical aggression, there was a positive effect for victimization, and no significant effect on attitudes towards violence. The pattern here in terms of the coloration, you can see there tends to be more positive outcome effects, but given the sort of large number of moderate and weak study designs relative to the stronger study designs, we have to be mindful of the impact that could have had on the outcomes of the evaluations. And so the key findings, in by and large, small effects on reducing violent behaviour, physical aggression, pro-violent attitudes and delinquency. The largest effects were for those approaches that incorporated a social norms element combined with a social development aspect. But the results were not consistent across these intervention types. So Simon et al. 2008-2009 reported some outcomes that were slightly negative, particularly around attitudes towards violence, which is one of the key outcomes that we were looking at. One of the perhaps limitations is the fact that most of the studies were undertaken in the US, so there's a particular need for studies outside of the US, but also then in low and middle income countries. I'll go back a minute, because I've mentioned we had five papers that were French or English, French or German language. So, I mean, that's almost half of the number of papers that we were able to find. So we've actually got someone on board to help us evaluate those, analyse those, incorporate those into the analysis. That's my note to say that. Time over. Had enough. There you go. Keep into time. Okay. So thank you very much for listening. Are there any questions? Thank you.
So a lot of these programs that we know of in the US or in other countries, from what I've read and what I've known, especially in the cluster randomized trial and the trials, these are very high fidelity programs. An investigator gets a grant and then they design a program and go to a school and like, we'll do this for you. They do the study. And after that, a lot of the programs from a few that I have researched and found out about, are either not available to everybody, or are on a website for sale. Or are developed in a way that the school where it was done is not able to continue for long with that kind of a model, because it's a very high fidelity program, lots of costs involved in things. Far you had the grant you were paying. So have you come across in your literature, so because you of course have read so much about about programs, have you read some programs where a lot of the things were done in a sustainable manner or with the involvement of the community or the school and their needs? So a lot of the programs are one size fits all. Was there something that, you know, was tailored to people?
Well, in terms of the tailoring, the social norms approach sort of tailors to the norm within the school. So there will be some tailoring there. In terms of inclusion of the school and development, there wasn't much evidence of that. It was very much a top-down approach rather than the bottom-up empowerment type of approach that I think is probably most successful. You know, when you actually incorporate the views, the opinions, integrate staff, pupils, etc., in the development of the program, I think that's where you're going to have the most success. I think where something like this piece of work comes out is, okay, it's somewhat limited because there's limited literature out there, to be honest, 13 studies, relatively weak quality, in terms of the quality of the studies or the evaluations. So we have to be a bit mindful of, what do those findings actually mean? Although the studies may be fairly weak, I don't think we should be put off by the fact that the most important aspects that we found were social norms approach incorporating social development. Now, in terms of, there are just some generic recommendations perhaps that can be made on what has been found to be successful in these high fidelity programs. So it's about getting this type of information out to the schools so that they can actually develop their own studies with the support from the appropriate people. But as we heard in the first talk, there needs to be some say, common risk factors to make this sustainable. It can't just all be about violence. And so looking to identify, well, how can this fit into what's already going on within curriculum, and developing an aspect of the curriculum, a strand of the curriculum that can incorporate some element of violence, then you find that you're actually embedding this and integrating this into the school life, requiring the school to be involved in that development. And so it's more likely to be sustainable, and it's more likely to address the issues of most relevance.
Right. So that would be the perfect approach, but is there evidence that approach works as well?
Well, in theory, that's the approach to adopt. I think we need to do it and evaluate it to find out if it's successful or not.
Thank you.
Thank you.